Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by our Director of Religious Education, Karen Lapidus, and Kathy Kearns, who's serving as our worship associate. We're glad to be together for this special all-ages service and welcome you all here today. I'd like to extend a special welcome to those of you who are with us for the first time this morning. We're always glad to have guests at our services and hope that you'll stay afterward for our social hour, which is held downstairs in Fessenden Hall right after the service. An adult religious education class that is a collaborative effort between us and the United Church of Christ in Kent will be starting this afternoon here in our basement, our church basement. It's a neighboring faiths class for adults that will be exploring the monotheisms of the Abrahamic tradition this spring, starting with Judaism. The class is designed to include field trips to houses of worship and also guest speakers, religious leaders from other traditions. We have invited several of the Christian congregations in Kent to send participants from them to participate with us as well, so we hope a few of you will take advantage of this opportunity right after second service.
Good morning. So as everyone knows, the stewardship campaign has been launched. Yay! And in celebration of that, and more importantly, there are two more opportunities to get to meet some of your fellow congregation members and visitors who are interested in finding out more about how they can further be part of the community of our church. And as we can probably safely say, that's a very big part of why almost all of us end up coming here and enjoy it so much. So there's two times that you can come to this, Thursday evening and Sunday. One Thursday is wine and cheese, and Sunday is bread and soup, I believe. So you get to eat, too. And there's childcare provided in activities if you need so. And Joe and I had the privilege of going to last Sunday's, and it was a lot of fun. Got to meet some people that we probably hadn't really had a conversation with before, and it was a good time. Thank you so much.
As Unitarian Universalists, our beliefs are shaped by many sources. This morning, we light our chalice in honor of Ted Geisel, also known to his readers as Dr. Seuss, who teaches us and the generations that follow us to be faithful, responsible, fair, and all while having fun.
Life speaks to us in many ways. Sometimes it is through a song or a book. Sometimes it is through the smile of another person or a dramatic night sky. Sometimes it is moments when we are alone and the world seems quiet. May we be open to the many messages of life that surround us. In that spirit of readiness, may we greet the day. Come, let us worship together. What do you think of when you think of Dr. Seuss? One theme in his work revolves around fun, imagination, and luck. You can see these themes in his real life as well as his books. Dr. Seuss's real name was Theodore Seuss Geisel, and he was born in Springfield, Massachusetts on March 2, 1904. Dr. Seuss loved books as a child. He fondly remembered hearing his mother read to him every night. He especially liked the rhythm in the words. He also enjoyed playing several musical instruments. And he loved to draw. There was a zoo in a park near his house. Dr. Seuss loved to go there and draw the animals. When he sketched them, though, he liked to mix up the features. For example, his tigers had wings and his giraffes had elephant ears. He only attended one art class in his whole life. The teacher criticized his drawings and told him he had no talent. Dr. Seuss later said, "That teacher wanted me to draw the world as it is. I wanted to draw things as I saw them." Luckily for Dr. Seuss, his parents saw his creative talents and encouraged his drawings. So did his future wife, Helen Palmer. When Dr. Seuss was a student at Dartmouth, a common phrase people would say to one another was, "Oh, the places you'll go, the people you'll meet." He loved adventure and exploring new places, and he and his wife traveled all around the world. Not everything was easy and fun for Dr. Seuss. His wife, Helen, had health problems. He was afraid to speak to large audiences. And when he tried to make a living as an illustrator, he had a hard time making enough money to support himself. Both hard work and luck contributed to Dr. Seuss's success as an author. While on a boat trip from Europe to the United States, he heard the rhythm of the engine and began thinking of the phrase, "And to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street." It took Dr. Seuss 6 months to write the book that has that name. He sent the manuscript to over 25 publishers, but none of them wanted to publish the book. One day, Dr. Seuss had the manuscript with him, and as he was walking around New York City, he ran into an old friend. He told his friend no one would publish the book, and he was ready to burn it. His friend was an editor for a book publisher, and he asked to read it. Thanks to his friend, Dr. Seuss became a published author of children's books. Just in this short biography, we can see many themes that emerged later in his books. In fact, his book suggests a credo for how to live life. That credo would read, in part, "The world is a more interesting place when you use your imagination. Work hard, play hard, and be sure to do both. Be open to new experiences and live life to its fullest. Life offers many challenges, but you can still have fun."
My section of our shared reflection focuses on the mid-years of Dr. Seuss's career. In 1957, Dr. Seuss published two books which would launch him on two parallel and meaningful paths. Many of you are of a certain age to remember well the Dick and Jane books, which were used to teach young children to read in the mid-20th century. These books, which depicted a very middle-class America filled with eternally well-mannered children, began to receive criticism from educators in the mid-1950s. Certainly, someone could write and illustrate a children's reading textbook that would honor the children's sense of humor and respect their inherent ability to know right from wrong. The publishers at Houghton Mifflin challenged Dr. Seuss to write a book that would be so exciting and fun that a first grader wouldn't be able to put it down. The publishers also required that it use only the 225 words on the list of simple words that all early learners need to know. It took nearly a year for Dr. Seuss to meet those two challenges and to write A Cat in the Hat, which was the first of many that would be published in the beginner book series. Other beloved titles include Green Eggs and Ham, Hop on Pop, and Fox in Socks. It is said that he forever changed the way that children learned to read. He continued to follow this career path and wrote books for the beginner book series for another 20 years. His other path led him toward engaging with the social issues of the times. Dr. Seuss would continue to offer social commentary and guidance for ethical living for the remainder of his life. The second book that he published in 1957 was How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which addressed the increasing commercialization of Christmas. Among the earlier books in this genre is The Sneetches, which is a lesson about the senselessness of prejudice and discrimination and is a favorite among Unitarian Universalists. As a child of German immigrants who owned a local brewery during the period of the First World War and the Prohibition, Dr. Seuss experienced the kind of prejudice and discrimination that he depicted in The Sneetches.
This morning we wish many joyous blessings upon Pat Pownell, who's celebrating her 75th birthday today. Her family is in from out of town and will be joining her this morning for a special birthday party at coffee hour to which everyone is invited. And will you hold in your thoughts and prayers Jim Harris and Claudia Miller? Jim Harris has begun receiving hospice care treatment, and Claudia is keeping him company in these last days of his life. Hold them in peace, that his passage may be peaceful. The world is always changing. Nothing stays the same. Every 24 hours, another turning toward morning. Here we are with a brand new day before us. How shall we live? Let it be in joy and gratitude for all of the gifts that we have been given. Let it be with open minds, open hearts, open hands. Let it be in beauty, the beauty within and the beauty all around us. Let it be with compassion for the sorrows and struggles that touch our lives and the ones of the people that we meet. Let it be in peace. Amen. And blessed be. Kathy and Karen have shared some of the ways in which Ted Geisel's passions have blessed the world. With his humor and creativity and unbounded imagination, Dr. Seuss transformed the world of children's literature. With his joyful use of color and shape and his whimsical way with words, Dr. Seuss has inspired generations to learn to read. That in itself is an accomplishment worthy of celebration, but there's even more to his story. When it became clear to him that our country would be playing a role in the expanding world war, Geisel set aside his literary career to contribute to the effort. For almost 2 years, he worked as a political cartoonist for PM magazine. The fight against fascism became so important to him that Geisel then enlisted in the United States military. The Army decided to use his artistic talents by stationing him with the Signal Corps, whose job it was to produce film footage for troops. One of the films that we worked on was called Your Job in Germany, and its purpose was to teach soldiers what they should do when they were finally able to free the country. Geisel had to travel to Germany in order to work on the film. He was outraged to see firsthand Hitler's abuse and oppression of the people of his family's native land. This experience only served to strengthen his disdain for anti-Semitism and his commitments to equality and freedom, which Karen described and which we heard in the Yertle the Turtle story. But like all people, Ted Geisel was complicated. At the time of the Second World War, many people in our country felt justified in their prejudice against people of Japanese descent. Giesel was one of those people. At the same time that he was using his political cartoons to reject bias against Jews and African Americans, he was also drawing stereotyped images of people of Japanese descent. His inconsistency was lost on him until he had the opportunity to travel to Japan after the war ended. While he was there, he saw the impact the atomic bomb had on the land and the people of Japan, and he met many people who he came to admire and respect. When he returned home from Japan, Dr. Seuss wrote Horton Hears a Who, which is a book about respecting and protecting the rights of vulnerable people. Later in his career, Dr. Seuss would also decide that he needed to recreate some of the drawings of Asian people in his book and to think that it happened on Mulberry Street in order to remove the bias that he was then able to see with new eyes. In the later years of his career, Giesel continued to learn and to grow and to respond to the social issues of the day. The Lorax, published in 1971, immediately resonated with both children and adults concerned about the impact of pollution and greed on the environment. Since its publication, The Lorax has become the symbol for countless environmental efforts, including the American Forests, the nation's oldest nonprofit citizen conservation organization. Dr. Seuss approved of the use of his book for environmental action. Indeed, he fashioned the conclusion as a call to action. The word of The Lorax seems perfectly clear. Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. Dr. Seuss would recast this concluding device in his best-selling The Butter Battle book, which was released in 1984 in response to the threat of the nuclear arms race between the United States and the Soviet Union. The book describes the escalating warfare between the Zooks, who eat their bread butter side down, and the Yooks, who spread their bread butter side up. The concluding page of the book depicts two old men standing atop a tall cement wall, each holding a big boy boomeroo poised to drop. A child watching from a tree narrates the last verse. "Grandpa," I shouted, "be careful. Oh, gee, who's going to drop it? Will you or will he?" "Be patient," said Grandpa. "We'll see. We will see." As soon as he finished the book, Giesel said he wasn't sure if it was an adult book for children or a children's book for adults. It topped the New York Times adult books bestseller list for 6 months. Ted Giesel was diagnosed with cancer in 1983. He knew as the disease progressed that he was nearing the end of his life, so in 1989 he set out to write the book that he knew would be his last. Oh, the Places You'll Go is a beautifully hopeful book reflecting the accumulated wisdom of the author's many years. The good doctor promises us that we are bound for great adventures. In life, we will surely succeed, except when we don't, because sometimes we won't. On our path, there will be slumps and long, confusing roads that lead to the waiting places where no one likes to go. But if we stay faithful and true to our path, we'll surely emerge to find another day dawning. That's what he tells us, only he says it in rhyme. You'll get mixed up, of course, as you already know. You'll get mixed up with many strange birds as you go. So be sure when you step, step with care and great tact. And remember that life's a great balancing act. Just never forget to be dexterous and deft, and never mix up your right foot with your left. And will you succeed? Yes, you will indeed. 98.75% guaranteed. Amen, and blessed be.
That's great.
Will the ushers please come forward? This church is a place where we can celebrate with one another in times of success and keep each other company in times of trouble. The strength of the community is sustained by our participation, by our contributions of time, talent, and treasure. We collect the offering each week as a symbol of our commitment to the community we create together and this ministry we share. The offering will now be gratefully received.
I've been trying something lately since my teacher told me maybe I've got something special deep inside. So I've been looking everywhere. I dance, I write, I sing, I swear I'm tearing down my tendency to hide. And she says, go your own way to shine, go your own way. Let your heart build a fire, don't be afraid. Go out on your own, then come back with a poem and add your light to mine. Together we'll shine. The words I used to start this song, I tell myself there's something wrong with everything I put down on the page. Then my heart, it starts to sing. The words are coming fast, they're bringing on such passion, pleasure, joy, and pain. And they say, go your own way to shine, go your own way. Let your heart build a fire, don't be afraid. You go out on your own, then come back with a poem and add your light to mine. And together we'll shine. And even though it's going to be hard, even though you might get scared, don't walk away from what you're feeling. You gotta stay with the pen on the page till the words come face to face with your soul, so you can free them. I've heard that there's a place I've never been before. They say it's like a distant shore past everything I've ever known, where all the songs and poems are stored beneath the music and the words, where every kind of beauty finds its form. It's where you go your own way to shine, go your own way. Let your heart build a fire, don't be afraid. Go out on your own, then come back with a poem and your light to mine. Together we'll shine. Together we'll shine. Together we'll shine.